We've got to understand that it's not just a workplace issue, and there's so many things that we've got to take into consideration as well. So what's happening, and a really big reason why people are feeling more and more burnt out, is because of the socioeconomic climate and society at a whole right now. People are working the same hours, but they're having to pay more money out, so they have less disposable income, so they can't do things like hobbies and do things that fill their cup.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this latest edition in the REC's Talking Recruitment podcast. I'm Kate Shoesmith. I'm Deputy Chief Executive at the Recruitment and Employment Confederation. It's great to be here once again as the host for Talking Recruitment in what has been a really busy time period for everybody at the REC. There's so much going on in the world of recruitment right now. We've just spent a fabulous few days with our international counterparts and our global community in the world of recruitment, staffing, and the HR for the World Employment Confederation Conference. Huge numbers of themes that came out that really cut across so much of the work that we do in a UK context. Big focus right now on terms of thinking about skills-based hiring and the client's appetite for that. Lots and lots of conversations around the work we want. So what are people asking for, but also what are clients asking for? The missing workforce was a big theme. And you'll see more of this type of research and working coming from us at the REC over the coming weeks and months. Moving to today's podcast and the topic, it's really timely because over the month of May in the United States, they adopt the whole month of May and call it Mental Health Awareness Month. And actually, the charity Mind have also founded a week in May for mental health awareness here in the UK. So I'm delighted that today I am joined by Katie Maycock, who is a founder and coach in the specific area of well-being. And we're going to have a bit of a chat today about what we can do as within recruitment business context, but also business more generally around well-being and what we can do for ourselves. Katie, it's lovely to be speaking with you today. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on.
Why don't we start, Katie, by you just describing a bit about the businesses that you run?
Yeah, so I run two businesses. So when I moved to the UK in 2018, I launched Get Your Shit Together, which is the first business, and then I launched GIST earlier this year. The businesses that I run is mainly focused at working with high-performing businesses and obviously business owners, CEOs and MDs, helping them understand the impact that stress is having them on as a person, as well as what that means to their business. And the reason why I do that is because of my own experience at burning out within recruitment and being a high performer in sales and things like that. And it's such a necessary conversation to have, which has then led me into talking a lot about burnout, especially in 2019, when the World Health Organization came out and said burnout was a diagnosable syndrome.
This is really important. I mean, it's a subject that's close to my heart as well, because I think whenever you, like for ourselves, we're in high pressure environments, we're working at a pace, which partly I feel I'm going to say something that's about me is designed by me. I'm putting that pressure in on myself in many ways. I want to do well. I want to do good. What happened in your experience? Because you said you were working in a recruitment environment. What happened particularly with you?
So mine was definitely the pressure I put on myself as well. And I think we can all agree recruitment is one of those roles that is high pressure and is high stress, and you do need to have resilience. And yes, you can have external forces that create that pressure, but I find more of the internal pressure quite damaging for myself. So when I went into recruitment, I was quite young. I was one of the only women in the company. And, you know, I was 23 or 24, and I probably looked like I was 15, if I'm being really honest with you. But no one believed I could be successful. So when I first went in, it was kind of like, oh my gosh, like let's have bets on when this girl leaves and things like that. And prior to that, I ran a business and I made a really big mistake in that business and lost that business. So I had a massive chip on my shoulder to prove. So I went into recruitment just wanting to be the best recruitment consultant I could possibly be. Now, when I went into recruitment, I ended up on a very cold, like ice cold desk. And so I had to breathe life into it. And so I sat there and I made sure that I would call every single medical device company, because I was recruiting for salespeople in the medical device world. And I called every single medical device company, introduced who I was, tried to pick up roles, and then spent hours looking for candidates. And I just worked myself into the ground. Now, I'd never had a corporate job either, so I didn't really know how to sort of manage that. And I mean, to be fair, it worked for a period of time. I ended up, you know, outbilling some of the people that had been in the company for some time. I ended up being rookie of the year, salesperson of the year. I was top biller. I did really well in my first year, you know, my first 6 months. I think I billed like $200,000, because this is back in Oz. This is being completely a rookie as well, so I had no idea. But what I did in that stage was I created so many unsustainable habits that ended up, you know, that ended up leading to me burning out. So I burnt out twice before I was 27. So I joined recruitment at 23, 24, burnt out twice before I was 27. And I was very, very physically unwell, and it really impacted my emotional well-being and my mental health. And I think from that point, I realized I wasn't the only person in that stage, but I do remember thinking, and today I still feel this, like, I feel really grateful that I burnt out at such a young age so I could learn better before I got, you know, before I got older and I did some really long-term damage. But yeah, I put so much pressure on myself to be the best, to you know, because once I started performing, it was like, oh, it's just, you know, rookie luck. So I had to prove it wasn't rookie luck. And then I had to make sure that the next year was even better than, you know, my first 6 months. And it was so much pressure on myself that I caused myself anxiety. I would, you know, go to bed thinking about what I could do to be better. And I'd wake up thinking what I could do better. I was checking my emails. I put so much pressure on myself to just perform that there was no place to take the foot off the gas, because I'd gotten there by putting my foot on the gas. So I didn't know any other way.
I'm guessing that where you are now, you must look at that time period and think you can see certain signals now. And what's your reflections looking back for you? Because you got to a place where you were burnt out, you were ill, you were physically unwell. But you looking back now, what have you taken from that time? What have you learned from it?
So much. So the first thing that was like, the first thing that I really understood was that stress is as much as a physical health issue than it is, like, it's not actually a mental health issue. And I think that's the first and foremost that we have to understand. It's a physical health issue that can lead to mental health and emotional, like, distress. But now I look back and I think about my concept of how I manage stress. So the biggest thing I got out of it was understanding what was happening to me physically, because that was confusing. So I was, you know, 26, 27, and I couldn't walk up and down stairs because my body just wouldn't let me. I couldn't digest food. I was really sick all the time. So understanding that link was incredibly important. And it was kind of like knowing it, but understanding it was really different. But the second thing that was really important for me to understand was that no one that I know, and I'm sure most of us out there don't know this, but we never really got taught what stress was, how it impacts us, and how to manage it more effectively. So I had to go, I look back now and I think I had such ineffective coping mechanisms to stress. So it was no wonder I was able to burn out so quickly and twice in really quick concessions. And so when I think about the way that I managed stress back then, a lot of it was sort of like, avoid it. I'm not going to deal with that. I don't have time for that. Or I'd kind of polish, you know, I'd polish my, the bad things into a really good thing. You know, I really fell into toxic positivity. I really just didn't deal with stress effectively. And now I look back at how that doesn't just impact my ability to work, because it did impact my ability to work in the end. I couldn't be a top biller anymore. I couldn't focus. I couldn't concentrate. I couldn't make good quality decisions. But now when I look back, it's like, okay, stress isn't something that I have to avoid. Stress is something that I can manage head on in more in a healthier way. And that was the biggest thing I took from that period.
And that's crucial, isn't it? Because as you say, like, the physical manifestations of what's happening, and we've all been there, is like, actually you're you think that you can keep going and keep going and keep going, and then there's a point in time where you just can't keep going, and it's absolutely physical. And I suppose, is there something that, so taking this to where you are now in terms of the businesses that you run, what do you expect employers to be doing about that? Because, okay, so the individuals, we all have a personal responsibility to think a little bit about what's happening in terms of our physical well-being and our mental well-being. Where do you direct employers to play a role in this?
So with employers, it's really, really important to, because there is an element where there is an individual responsibility. And I always say there's a dual approach when you're managing well-being in any organization. But in a business, you have to be able to. So there's a couple of things you've got to do. The first thing that you've got to do is you've got to create an environment where people can manage their stress. So making sure that people have those good boundaries in place, so making sure that people do have time to do all the good things that they need to do to take care of themselves, you know, get enough sleep, make sure they can exercise, make sure that they're having enough downtime to recuperate, making sure that they have the tools and the resources they can do to make sure that they're taking care of all elements of well-being. And that's one element. So making sure you're not, you know, if people are saying that they've got high workloads, understanding what that means to that person, looking at, is it reasonable for those workloads? You know, at the moment we're seeing with the companies that I've been working with, because there's been so much recession and there's been so much redundancies, it's taking a toll on the people in the organization, the people that are left in the organization, and having that transparent communication is incredibly important as well. But the other thing as well, it's really important for companies and organizations to create an environment where people feel comfortable letting their managers know that they aren't coping, without any judgment, without any sort of negative impact to that person. And I think, so there's that psychological safety that you've got to be able to create with the people in your team. But the first thing you've got to do is create that environment where people can talk about their problems, can take care of themselves, creating an environment where there is transparency. So people aren't, here's the thing, if you don't give people information, people will create a narrative, and typically that narrative will be negative, especially if there's a lot of negative situations happening outside of the world and potentially in the organization, and it might not be as bad as the narrative that they're creating, and they're going to live in that stress, they're going to live in fear, and they're going to create, it's going to be really negative for that person. So that's something that organizations have to do. And to be able to understand where your company's at, you do have to do surveys. You've got to do the pulse surveys, get a better understanding about how your employees are perceiving the workplace that you've created, because that's incredibly important for you to understand if there is any problems within your organization that you can fix.
I think that's crucially important. Within the REC, we use something called WOTA. They're one of our business partners, and it's exactly that. It's the pulse survey. So everybody, myself included, they ask us daily questions, and it's a really good pulse check. And the questions come under different themes. I suppose there's a sense for us, if I take myself away from being an employee into the employer leader space, there's a sense for us of when you start to feel that, oh, is this a difference from what has gone before? Is this a new trend, a new development? And how do you feel that the conversation about well-being and the tools that we need to adopt about well-being in 2024, how do they differ from what you've seen and done before?
So this is massive. And something we have to understand is the ever-growing element of burnout. So just to put this into context, in 2020, surveys, a big study came out and said that 23% of the workforce was feeling burnt out. So that was 2020. At the beginning of last year, another survey came out and said that the UK workforce, 46% of people were feeling burnt out. This year, it's now 76%. So we're seeing a massive increase in people feeling burnt out.
So it's basically doubling every
year. It's terrifying.
Yeah.
And I do think it is going to get better. I do think it will get better, but it's going to get worse before it gets better, in my personal opinion, from what I've seen. But we've got to understand that it's not just a workplace issue, and there's so many things that we've got to take into consideration as well. So what's happening, and a really big reason why people are feeling more and more burnt out, is because of the socioeconomic climate and society at a whole right now. People are, you know, people's bills are more, people are working the same hours, but they're having to pay more money out, so they have less disposable income, so they can't do things like hobbies and do things that fill their cup. You know, we've got people unable to afford certain healthcare that they need to be able to take care of themselves. There are so many different elements that's coming into play. So historically, just to put this into context, and if you go on the World Health Organization and look at burnout, they're going to say it's a occupational issue. It's an occupational hazard. When realistically now, I think we're seeing an overarching burnout across everything. It's no longer just a workplace issue. It's now becoming a human issue. It's becoming a financial issue. It's becoming a all area issue. So people, yes, maybe work was stressful, but maybe they'd go home and they would be able to decompress. They would have that support. Maybe that's gone away because they don't have that support, whether it's financial, whether it's societal and things like that. So it is becoming a little bit more challenging in the workforce to be able to manage. And especially because in 2024 and 2023, we're seeing leaders more burnt out in the organizations than we've ever seen before. And typically when you have a burnt out leader, it is going to have a trickle down effect on the employees that you're working with. And so that's a massive thing that a lot of organizations have to start focusing on, is making sure that you're supporting your leaders. Because if your leaders are burnt out, there's two elements to that. You are either going to have an anxious leader who is going to be in survival mode, who's not going to be able to pay attention to they're just so worried about them and their team that they're not making good quality decisions. It's difficult to have good quality communication when you're feeling anxious. It's really difficult to sort of take care of the well-being of your staff if you're not even able to take care of yourself. The other side of the coin is apathy is a massive problem with burnout, and you can't have an apathetic leader, because if you have an apathetic leader, they it's not that they don't care, it's they don't have the capacity to care because they're so overwhelmed. And so that's just some of the things we've got to pay attention to. Yes, there's so much you can do in a workplace, but it's a human element now. And I think that's something that we've got to really think about when we think about resources and we think about supporting people.
The scale you're talking about, this means that even if you aren't personally experiencing burnout at that moment in time, mm-hmm. there is a likelihood that you may at some point, and I hope you don't, but you know, there's a likelihood that you may, but also it doesn't matter because there's a very strong likelihood that somebody within your team will be experiencing this.
Yep.
So it's endemic. It's part and parcel of the world of work, is how you're describing it to me right now. I suppose what you're saying though is that some of the causes, and they may be the stresses that we literally cannot control for. So the economic climate, as much as I want us to do really, really well in a sales environment and I want us to do more and better, I can't control the overall economic outlook. Mm-hmm. You know, I can do some of the performance measures. There's things I cannot do very much about the global situation and the fact that inflation was rampant last year and the runaway energy prices. And I suppose that's the piece where it's a case of, what do you take back into your control? How can that partnership that you spoke about so eloquently, when you have, it's a responsibility on the employer and the individual. Mm-hmm. How can you take care of yourselves when there are these external forces? And actually, let's take recruitment in your direct experience of it. It is a high pressure environment. There are sales targets to be met. They're not going to disappear. So what do you do in those environments?
So one of the things that I always, you know, look, this isn't the first rodeo most of us have gone through when it comes to, like, you know, a financial, you know, a global financial crisis. crisis, which we're not in a crisis, but you know what I mean?
I do.
Yeah. Most people, this isn't their first rodeo if you've been in recruitment for some time. Usually, it's a twofold, and I do see this with recruitment companies. You need to make sure that you've got money coming in, and we've got to say the last 12 months in recruitment has been extremely challenging for many, many recruitment companies. It's been very stressful. It's been very challenging. So what typically happens when people are in this, and if you're a business owner, and I'm going to just talk about the organizational side here, and or if you're a sales director in recruitment, a really quick thing that people can do is that you put so much pressure on your sales team to make more money, and you make the targets harder, and you start implementing things that is to get money in right now, but you're not focusing on the long-term goal. So what you're doing is you're already taking people who are already somewhat stressed out, because recruitment is a stressful role, it's high pressured, and you're putting more pressure on them, expecting them to perform under that additional pressure. And what happens is that's not going to happen. You're going to cause a lot of fatigue in the company. You're going to cause disengagement. You're definitely going to add to burnout with these people, and you're going to create a toxic environment. And it's really difficult for you to be able to take a step back and actually try and not put pressure on these people, because that is what many, many people are doing right now. What you've got to be able to do is take a step back and think about what can we be doing alternatively than just putting pressure on and trying to make our sales team make more money so we can get through this, you know, recession. Because at the end of it, you're going to have a very unhappy, unhealthy team, and you're going to have to rebuild that when we start coming out of this economic situation that we're in right now. So that's on that side. So making sure that you're creating an environment where people can perform, people can show up, and not have this overarching pressure on themselves to perform at a level that doesn't make sense. So that's one thing. The second thing that you need to, on the other side, is having those conversations within the organization on what people are experiencing and what people can do to support. I truly believe in peer support. I think that is something that is so incredibly important that can create such a great environment for people. So talking about things that, you know, you as a team can do to help manage stress. Not everyone has to do the same thing, but talking about things that help manage stress. I think there is creating an environment and a culture where, you know what, when people aren't at work, we don't contact them for work-related stuff. We contact them only for fun things, if that's the case. You know, really respecting people's downtime, really encouraging that downtime as well. Sales is not a 9-to-5 job. I think we can all agree with that. But making sure people feel okay not checking their emails, not checking their messages, not checking their phones when they first wake up in the morning and doing it the last thing at night. Actually encouraging that downtime, encouraging people to have time away from their desk, encouraging people to do things that are going to fill their cup, and creating a culture that allows people to not feel guilty for taking a lunch break, or not feel guilty for not, you know, looking at their phone at 6 o'clock in the morning. Like creating those cultures that's going to allow people to restore their energy so they can come into the office, or, you know, if they're working from home, go into their home office and be able to have the energy to perform at a high level, but for, you know, sustainably, because that's something that's incredibly important. I think gone are the days of the churn and burn in recruitment. I think we've got to get out of that mindset. I don't think we can really have that mindset anymore, and really fostering a high-performing culture that isn't based on just putting so much pressure and stress on a sales team to perform until they break. That's just not working anymore. And if you put more pressure on salespeople right now, they're going to break quicker than you think they are, because they have so much pressure on them right now.
I could not agree more. I mean, it's just not it's not acceptable, is it? It's just no. It's not how we would want to be treated ourselves. So we understand that. And yes, there might have been models in the past, and yes, we might have all socked it up, and that's okay. But it's just not the way of the world now. And we've learned the hard way that didn't actually get. But the most important thing of what you said is that we don't have the people to do this. We don't have people to burn through. There isn't this labor market that's just sat there waiting for us to take them in. And everything that you've just pointed to from my side is, it goes back to that, the old adage of actually what you need to be really focused on within your organization is, it's got to be about the outcomes, right? So yeah. am I getting to the right results? I love the point about whether you're sacrificing the long term for the short term gain, because if you just keep adding on layers and layers of targets that are just never going to be reached, then what does that really look like for anybody? And why and how are you and how are you going to get a different result by doing the same thing and just more of it? So it's all about the outcomes and thinking that through. I think there's one of the things that you are identifying is that you've got to take quite a holistic approach to all of this. I suppose my question is there's no one size fits all. How do you identify the different strategy? I suppose, how do you know the strategy for your organization, perhaps, when you know that everybody's unique and different?
Yeah, so this is a big conversation. And I think there's so many initiatives out there. There's so many strategies like 4-day work week, flexible working and all that. And we can talk about the concept of that. But the first thing you have to do is understand your workforce and what their needs are. What does your workforce look like? If you've got a workforce, and I'm just using this as an example, and you've got, 40% of your workforce is working mums and working dads, you have to think about what they need and what's going to support them the most to make sure that they can take care of themselves and take care of their kids and not feel the pressure. So understand your workforce, understand the demographics that you've got within your workforce, understand what stresses they might have, because you need to understand your workforce and your organization before you implement anything. Because if you implement a strategy that's only to support, working parents, and you've only got a 5% parents in your organization, I'm obviously using really random statistics here, but 95% don't, it's not going to fit. It's not going to do what you need it to do. So understand your workforce, understand what they need, and create an environment that supports them. So what you've got to do is do the pulse survey, so you understand, every element of your workforce, who's working for you, what are some of the things that they're dealing with, different generations need different things as well, so understand that. And the next thing to do is listen to what people are saying, hear what your people are talking about. Do focus groups. You might need to get someone externally to come in and do a focus group so you can get a really good feel for it, because people might not feel comfortable if you've created an environment where people don't feel that there's trust in there. Understand what people are saying, understanding what their needs are, and create a strategy as best as you possibly can that's going to fit that. And that's something that's incredibly important. I think what I see companies do really wrong is that, not wrong, I don't like saying the word wrong, but sometimes where they sort of fall short is they try these initiatives and they don't really know what outcome they're trying to achieve, and they don't really know what strategy is going to work for them, and then they get disheartened and they're like, oh well, that's not working, so let's try this. It's like, well, no, understand what outcome you're trying to have and then look at the strategy from that. The other thing is as well is a lot of companies don't align their business strategy with their well-being strategy, and that's where a lot of people can get it really, really wrong. So if you've got a HR team or in a well-being team that are wanting to do an initiative for well-being, and then your business strategy does not align with that at all. It's like, high pressure, let's get people working more, let's get more, put more targets on people, bring more money, and you've got this well-being strategy that's like, unlimited holidays, 4-day work week, and it doesn't align, there's going to be a lack of trust and there's going to be huge amounts of disengagement in your organization. So it's really important that when you're creating the business strategy, thinking about the well-being strategy and how that fits in, and building them together and making sure it makes sense. And also being really honest with yourself, is this a long-term goal? Is this a long-term strategy? But that's what I would be doing. So do a pulse check, understand your organization, listen to your team, make sure the strategy that you're creating is going to tie in really nicely with your business strategy, and really understand the outcome that you're trying to achieve.
I love that. Do you know what you've done? You've fully made the case for why that people lead needs a seat at the top table. So we always bang on about this, is like recruitment and retention, two sides of the same coin. Use your recruitment consultants as that consultancy service, because they will see very clearly what the issues are within your organization, but actually within your business. Same applies with the TA teams, the in-house teams. They have got to be part and parcel of that conversation at the top table, because if you're trying to do these things separately, you're not paying attention to your best resource, which is your people. You've really crystallized that. So thank you. And Katie, I'm going to try and bring things together as we come to the end of this particular podcast. So it would be great to give everybody a sense of where they can find out more about you and the organizations that you lead. But I suppose, is there anything you would want to finish on in terms of, you said it, May is the month for mental health awareness. What would you say people should perhaps do a little bit differently this month than they might have done before?
I think what I would say, so it's actually Mental Health Awareness Month, and I believe the theme this year is anxiety, which I think a lot of people are feeling right now. So one thing that I think people really need to start recognizing and start doing is looking at their stress and how they're currently managing it, and be really honest with themselves if that is working for them or against them. And a lot of people don't do that because we're not taught how to manage stress. What we've done is we've created habits and behaviors around stress management from whether it's from how we grew up, society, organizations, all that kind of stuff, right? I'm not going to go off a tangent, I promise. But really start acknowledging your own stress, understanding where it's coming from, and think about one thing that you can do today or every week that's going to help reduce that stress. We talk about awareness days, but we don't talk about understanding days, and we don't talk about action days, but it has to be action led. So that's what I would be recommending. And if you're an organization, making sure that it's just not one month, making sure that this is an everyday conversation.
I love that. So my action for today is I need to understand, where does my stress come from? That's brilliant. Katie, thank you. I've so enjoyed talking to you. You're a font of knowledge. Where can people go to find out more about you?
So obviously you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn. But go to my website, so www.gistwellbeing. So that's GYST wellbeing.com. That's very much for the company side, the organizational side. I've got loads of blogs on there. We've got loads of things, we've got loads of things happening over on the GIST side. If you are looking more for a bit more of that stress management for yourself, definitely go check out my other website, which is www.getyourshittogether.io, and it is spelt exactly the way it sounds, so it is that. And that's definitely for the personal side. You can get your own burnout score, you can get your team to do a burnout score to see if anyone in your team is burnt out and what that means. But we have also a lot of information, and we put out emails once a week or twice a week based on things that you can do just to help manage your stress or help manage your team's stress as well. So we've got lots of information there.
Brilliant. Thank you, Katie. I will be checking those out. Really great. Really, really good to talk with you today. And thank you, everybody, for listening to today's Talking Recruitment podcast. If you are in the appetite to see us in person, then we've got a number of REC member network events coming to a region near you over the coming months. So Neil will be in the southeast on the 16th of May. We're in Northern Ireland on the 23rd of May, and in Yorkshire on the 6th of June. All of the details and the exact locations are on the REC website. But our big thing is our big in-person get-together. We are back as an in-person conference for REC Live 24 on the 25th of June in London. I cannot wait because there are so many brilliant speakers coming along, and it's really going to be honing in on the things that are mattering to us right now on a business level of what is it we need to be doing to think about the future of the labour market? How are we supporting clients through this most difficult of times that Katie has been speaking about today? And how are we supporting our staff to do the best we possibly can? So I really hope to see a number of you there. And if you've enjoyed today's Talking Recruitment podcast, then please do tune into one of our previous episodes. The previous episode, episode 33, was such an important topic about the role of domestic abuse and what are the roles and responsibilities of employers and how we can actually play a part in that. And it's really important that something that we can take the initiative on. Episode 32 was about tech and AI in the recruitment industry. Is it going to take over with the Department for Business and Trade, where they specifically spoke about some of the funding that is available, for, particularly from an SME's perspective, to support with AI initiatives in professional services sector right now. And then we have a number of other episodes looking at the legal changes that happened in April that I know we're still all navigating through, and around how do we build strong recruitment partnerships was episode 30 with Maxine Bly. But that's all we have time for today's Talking Recruitment podcast. Thank you very much, and I hope to talk to you all again soon.
Thank you for listening today. I hope you took away some valuable thoughts from this discussion. If you'd like to hear more, head to rec.uk.com/talkingrecruitment or follow us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Simply search Talking Recruitment to find us.